Okay, so we'll do our bows together. For those of you that haven't done any bows before, we just acknowledge the Buddha as the teacher, the teachings, and the spiritual community. So we traditionally do three bows, but you can also just do this. We do the traditional half bow, where we touch our forehead to the floor, but with the regular namaste, recognizing the spiritual light within yourself and all beings. Okay. So set a good motivation and we'll do the bow. There's a hole right here if anybody wants to sit closer. Merle, you can open the back that door so you can see better. Yeah. There's a little latch at the top there. It's just a little thing you pull down. You just pull it down. Yeah. Great, now I can see you. Okay. So we'll do our regular prayers. Geshe-la called this morning and said to say hello to everyone. And everything's going well. He's very happy and excited with the teachings. His Holiness is very well. So we'll say the prayers in English. So as we say the prayers, please think of the Buddha and the space before you. You can think of the historical Buddha, or you can think of His Holiness the Dalai Lama, or your spiritual mentor. And really generate a feeling sense, you know, a feeling of being with your teacher, being with the Buddha. Because that just helps us in the sense of generating interest and care about our spiritual path. I take refuge in my gurus. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dhamma. I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in my gurus. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dhamma. I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in my gurus. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dhamma. I take refuge in the Sangha. From the heart of the Lord of the Gandan Devas emerges a brilliant white cloud, like a great mass of fresh yogurt. Atop sits Tsongkhapa, all-knowing king of Dharma. We request your coming to this place along with your great disciples. My Lord Guru is seated before me on a lion throne, lotus and moon cushion. His white face smiles blissfully. Please remain many eons and serve as the supreme merit field for the growth of my mind of faith and for the increase of Lord Buddha's teachings. Your omniscient wisdom mind encompasses all that is existent. Your speech is a profound teaching which ornaments the ear of the fortunate. Your body's beautiful radiance evokes wondrous admiration. I prostrate to you, Lama Tsongkhapa, who merely viewing, hearing, or contemplating earns one great merit. I present to you, Supreme Field of Merit, Tsongkhapa, beautiful offerings, pure sweet water, the various flowers, fragrant incense, butter lamps, perfumes, and more, both physical and mental offerings, vast as the clouds and wide as the ocean. The unwholesome actions of body, speech, and mind I have accumulated since time without beginning, especially actions contrary to my three vows, Vinaya, Bodhisattva, Vajrayana. I regret extremely from the depths of my heart and reveal each and every such action. We totally rejoice in your magnificent achievements, my Lord. You strove for knowledge and realization, abandoned the eight worldly concerns, and made the most meaningful use of human life with the 18 opportune conditions during these degenerate times. Pray, all you holy gurus, unerring in conduct, precipitate a rain of vast and profound Dharma from the billowing clouds of wisdom and compassion which fill the Dhammakaya sky, providing for the field of disciples precisely what is needed. May the Vajra body, created from the purity of clear light, free of the rising and setting of cyclic existence, but visible to the ordinary viewer only in its unsubtle physical form, stay on unchanging, without waning, until samsara ends. May whatever virtue I have gathered here beneficially serve all sentient beings and the Buddha Dharma, and especially may the essential teachings of the unerring master Tsongkhapa shine forever. Jai Tsongkhapa, crown jewel of the holy masters of the land of snows, you are Avalokiteshvara, great treasure of inconceivable compassion, untainted by ego's delusion. You are Manjushri, powerful master with stainless wisdom. You are Vajrapani, destroyer of forces of demons. At your feet, famed Lozongkhapa, I humbly bow and earnestly that all sentient beings achieve enlightenment. Jai Tsongkhapa, crown jewel of the holy masters of the land of snows, your Avalokiteshvara, great treasure of inconceivable compassion, untainted by ego's delusion. You are Manjushri, powerful master with stainless wisdom. You are Vajrapani, destroyer of forces of demons. At your feet, famed Lozongkhapa, I humbly bow and earnestly request that all sentient beings achieve enlightenment. Jai Tsongkhapa, crown jewel of the holy masters of the land of snows, you are Avalokiteshvara, great treasure of inconceivable compassion, untainted by ego's delusion. You are Manjushri, powerful master with stainless wisdom. You are Vajrapani, destroyer of forces of demons. At your feet, famed Lozongkhapa, I humbly bow and earnestly request that all sentient beings achieve enlightenment. Glorious, precious Rukhu, please take the lotus seat at my crown, and in your great peace care for us, bestow upon us the attainments of your body, speech, and mind. Glorious, precious Rukhu, please take your lotus seat in our hearts, and in your great kindness care for us. Grant us the blessings for our temporal success and for the supreme attainment. Glorious, precious Rukhu, please take the lotus seat at our hearts, and in your great kindness remain with us. remain steadfast until we attain enlightenment. So let's take a moment to just do that visualization. Again, Lama Tsongkhapa is the founder of the particular lineage that we follow, the Gelugpa lineage. And he was a 14th century incredible master. So you can think of Lama Tsongkhapa or His Holiness the Dalai Lama, Geshe-la, your spiritual mentor. Even if you're in another tradition, you know, you can think of that person or being who has inspired you and really turned your mind towards spiritual practice. So imagine calling to mind that being. And as in those verses, imagine calling a replica of that being, made of light, very tiny, inviting to the crown of your head. And then imagine that the image dissolves into light, descends through your crown, and floods your body, speech, and mind with enlightened energy and wisdom. And then appears again, very tiny, at your heart, non-different than your own enlightened potential. And we'll continue with the Seed of Wisdom Sutra. Unthinkable, inexpressible, wisdom gone beyond, unborn, unceasing, space-like in essence, clearly perceived by wisdom mind, homage to the mother of the Buddhas of the three times. Gone, gone, gone beyond, gone completely beyond, so be it. Gone, gone, gone beyond, gone completely beyond, so be it. Gone, gone, gone beyond, gone completely beyond, so be it. So take a few moments to contemplate our interdependent relationship with all beings around us, with our teachers, with our spiritual path, with every phenomena, that we have an interconnected relatedness. And we'll do the mandala offering. So imagine offering for the new year all the excellent and beautiful things that you experience and enjoy, the good fortune we have to be alive in the new year, and you know, our safety and freedom here, our excellent resources. So imagine all those things that are precious to you, and don't take them for granted. No, don't take them for granted. Really think about how there are many beings everywhere who do not have the kind of freedom and resources that we have. So appreciate that, and imagine, you know, with a mind of generosity, offering that to all beings everywhere, that they may share in what we just have very freely. by the virtue of offering to you assembly of Buddhas visualized before me, this mandala built on a base, resplendent with flowers, saffron water, and incense, adorned with Mount Meru and the four continents, as well as with the sun and moon, may all sentient beings share its effects. Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kamniya Tayami. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the highest assembly. From the virtuous merit of hearing the teachings, may I attain Buddhahood for the benefit of all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the highest assembly. From the virtuous merit of hearing the teachings, may I attain Buddhahood for the benefit of all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the highest assembly. From the virtuous merit of sharing the teachings, may I attain Buddhahood for the benefit of all sentient beings. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to put the incense out. So this morning I wanted to focus on the practice of loving kindness to open the new year, and that we could really contemplate that and look at recognizing that quality of loving kindness in ourselves. So that just like our things and our resources, you know, we don't take it for granted, or just think that that's the way things always have to be. But realize, you know, the state of mind of love and of kindness is, they say, our natural quality. But so often it gets overwhelmed by different disturbing mental attitudes that occur. But in fact, that is our natural quality, you know, the space of love and openness and freedom and care for others. It's a very natural arising quality in ourselves. But I'd like us to be able to appreciate it today, because, you know, when different disturbing states of mind arise, realize, you know, that there's an obstacle that comes up, like a roadblock, where, in fact, though we naturally associate with the space of freedom and loving kindness, when things aren't the way we expect them to be, we shut down, we become very judgmental and narrow. So I'd like us to really look at how that occurs, what happens, and and get in touch with that space of loving kindness. So so I'd like to read something from Nagarjuna, and you can sit in repose and enjoy these 20 verses from Nagarjuna, which some students often say every day, you know, every day as a recollection. So get in touch with your own loving kindness, your own sense of love and freedom, you know, love which is very caring and open and fresh. Robert, there's lots of spaces right here. Come in late, you know what happened. Okay. So again, you can, let's just sit for a few moments, just getting in touch with our own sense of loving kindness, and then I'll read the verses. Okay, you can just arrive and notice if there's any tension in your body anywhere, and adjust yourself so that you can sit comfortably. And then gently bring your attention to the breath. Just allow any tension or stress to wash away and get in touch with that open heart. Place of caring and love. And I'll read these verses from Nagarjuna. Honoring in all ways the Buddhas, the Dharma, the community, and also the Bodhisattvas, to them I go for refuge and pay homage to those worthy of homage. I turn away from all negativity and embrace all kinds of merit. I rejoice in all the merit amassed by all sentient beings. With bowed head and palms together, I beseech all perfect Buddhas to turn the wheel of Dharma and to remain as long as beings remained. Through the merit of doing this and the merit I have done and not yet done, may all sentient beings be endowed with unsurpassed mind of awakening. May all sentient beings have immaculate faculties and transcend the unfree states. May they control their own actions and live by a good livelihood. May all embodied beings have jewels in their hands, and may a limitless amount of all kinds of necessities remain inexhaustible for as long as samsara endures. At all times, may all women become supreme persons. Remember, Nagarjuna was in a male monastery. So, at all times, may all women become supreme persons. May all beings be endowed with intelligence and legs. May all beings have good complexions and also a good physique. May they be radiant and pleasant to behold. Free of illness, may they be strong and live long. May they all gain expertise in the methods and become free of all suffering. May they become devoted to the three jewels and have the great treasure of the Buddha Dharma. And of course, for those of you in another tradition, faith tradition, you know, you can replace that with words of your faith. May all be adorned with love, compassion, joy, the ability to remain equanimous in the face of hardship, generosity, morality, patience, heroic effort, meditative concentration, and wisdom. Thus adorned, may they complete all the collections, and obtaining brilliant marks and secondary signs, may they traverse without hindrance the 10 stages to the inconceivable. May I also become adorned with these good qualities and all others as well. May I become freed from all faults, and may I attain supreme love for all beings. May I perfect the virtues to which all beings aspire, and may I always dispel the suffering of all embodied beings. In all worlds, may all beings who are feeling anxious due to fear become completely fearless, merely by hearing my name. From seeing and thinking of me, and from merely hearing my name, may beings become clear-minded, undisturbed and at ease. May it be definite that they will awaken, and in all their future lives may they attain the five psychic powers, And always may I always do what brings benefit and happiness to all beings. May I always dissuade all at once all those beings of any world who intend to engage in negativity without doing them any harm. Like the earth, water, wind, and fire, medicinal herbs and the trees of the wilderness, may I always be made use of freely by all beings just as they wish. And this is a favorite verse that's recited by His Holiness and many other great teachers. May I be beloved of beings, and may they be more beloved to me than myself. May I bear the results of their negativity, and may they have the results of all my virtue. As long as there is even some single sentient being somewhere who is not yet free, may I remain in the world for that being's sake, even if I have attained unexcelled awakening. So let's just sit quietly with that for a few moments. So this practice of loving kindness, there's a very strong prayer that was started really from the Buddha, where he says, may I be filled with loving kindness. Now, so we'll do that at the end. May I be filled with loving kindness. And you just imagine letting go, letting down your guard, you know, of all this holding that we do, this tension and this narrowing and judgmental mind, you know, it's just allowing that loving kindness to just flood through you. And, you know, think about how that helps us to develop patience and interest in others too. You know, it's like when we turn that prayer around, may you be filled with loving kindness. You know, may you also be filled with loving kindness. So, essentially, you know, it's like you think of an enlightened being's love is not fluctuating and fickle and changeable and inconstant like ours is, you know, that it's just very, very steady. Whereas for us, you know, we are so dependent on the other person performing or being a certain way for us in order for us to love them, that we become very critical and our love is quite inconstant. No, our love is not very caring. It's in fact more caring about ourselves and our own needs, where in fact, you know, love is something that's very free and open and allowing others to be how they are, to be who they are, and to encourage them to engage in things as they wish. You know, of course, watching safety and harming and hurting others, you know, watching these conditions, but love itself is very free, very, very free, you know, and it has so much more caring for others. Whereas, you know, what they're called are near enemies, right? We practice love, but then a near enemy of our practice is attachment, when it might parade around as love, but in fact it's possessive and it's clinging and it wants the other person to appear and do and be in a certain way in order for you to convey and allow that love to flow. It's much more selfish and constricting. And so, you know, you can say, my feelings are dependent on how you love me. Yeah. How I love you is dependent on how you are. Which is, you can see, not very caring. It's more filled with self-interest and your own needs. Yeah. So this side is not, of love, is not clinging, not demanding, not exacting upon others about how they should be. So it does not manipulate. Or, you know, when you think about it, you can't ever even possess anyone. But sometimes we get into that strange mind state where we do. You know, like I've seen that with people with their kids or their relationships, their significant others. When we don't own anyone at all, you know. As I was preparing this, I was thinking about how when I was young, there was this young mother who had twins, and they were 6 months old. And I was just watching in horror, you know, because she was feeding them, you know, these little Gerber baby things, feeding the both babies this, and the babies didn't want to eat them anymore. And so she would slap them on the face and then keep forcing the food, and the babies didn't want to eat, so she would keep slapping them, these six-month-old babies, slapping them on the face to feed them some more. And so finally the babies ate the whole thing and then they barfed. You know? And so then she spanked them because they didn't keep the food down. And, you know, it's like, I'm thinking about how we just get into this distorted, confused mind state about, well, it's feeding time, it's 6 o'clock, they have to eat this much right now to keep on schedule, you know, and it's not listening or paying attention or being cognizant of the pulse of the other person, you know. And so you watch how we do that in our relationships with others, you know. It doesn't have to be a six-month-old innocent baby, but how we work and operate with others in our lives. And it's quite sad a lot of times, you know. We create a claustrophobic environment for the persons that we're in relationship with, and it's not very free and open at all. Okay, did you want to comment?
It's very sad to also see young mothers with their kids on the subway in New York after midnight, like three-year-old kids. That came to mind when we talked about them, listening all the time. I think these people should be with a relative asleep already, these kids, you know. But they weren't thinking about the kids, they were thinking about whatever their reasons were for being out, whatever they were doing.
Right, right. Yeah. And you think about this place of love, you know, how especially at when we're very young, we are just open, completely open to the world. And it's like all our senses are receptive to whatever is going on around us. You know, And last night I caught a little bit of a program about gangs in LA and how these young kids have no other references. They're in poverty, their parents are in gangs, their friends are in gangs, and all they aspire to is to be included, to be part of, to belong, to be accepted by others, you know, and that's how we all are, all of us, really. That there's this open heart that wants to be cared for and wants to love others too. But when the environment is such that we're manipulated in certain ways, you know, you watch how we fall into this, and these kids come into gangs as well, just out of a sense of deep longing to be a part of and to have to be recognized by others, you know, that they have no other experience. And so, you know, so even us as adults, how, you know, we become more mature and sophisticated as to how we will receive and give our love. And so watch, you know, when in fact this love itself is very pure and open and caring and receptive, you know. And what is it that we're pouring into our own senses, you know, of our sight, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching? You know, what is it that we're pouring in to our own psyche as to what we will express and turn around and engage in as well? You know, so we have to be careful to watch when we get into these superficial conditions of what we think is love, and then we think that's the way we have to be, you know, and how we express it to others. So so the Buddha spoke of two kinds of happiness. When you ask, what is happiness? What is happiness? Let's ask you folks first, what is happiness? What do you think the Buddha would say? What is happiness? Frank? When we're running after, yeah, I mean, that is one level of it, isn't it? One level. That's like the first suffering. Remember the three kinds of suffering? Okay, Frank, do you want to share them?
Pervasive suffering, pain, suffering of pain, and karma.
Suffering of suffering? Okay. So you could say that your expression, the absence of suffering, you know, when my hand is pulled out of the fire, I feel pretty good. Yeah, the absence of suffering at that point, yeah. Uh-huh. Manila?
Well, it's conditional and absolute happiness.
Okay, do you want to give some examples of that?
Well, we have conditional happiness. We look at it and say, oh, if I eat ice cream, I'll be so happy. Or if I were a child, and so forth. Or if I get something in samsara, then I feel that this is happiness, but it's all temporal. It is temporal, it's conditional, but it absolute is to understand the happiness that continues and is more or less permanent. What you want is to give this to others and yourself. And the happiness is to understand that you want to do things that will be continuous, and not to cause harm, not cause suffering. To like the taking things that people are suffering, they're willing to take it, and give other people the happiness, the atonement.
Mm-hmm.
Practice that.
Right. So we do have these two levels of happiness. They say, you know, the temporal happiness of food and shelter, friends, reputation. What else is there? Good reputation, uh-huh.
I would say happiness is like true nature, like you want to.
Yes, right. Okay. So that is like the, the second happiness that Mamie was explaining, you know, the condition or the situation of the happiness that we can attain, which is through spiritual realization as well, we can get in touch with that. And so we do need to cultivate these two kinds of happinesses, you know, the temporal of having adequate shelter and food and friendship and care, things like this, and then the deeper happiness, you know, which is really through this mind of satisfaction and letting go of our negativities, etc. So this side of developing that, you know, I wanted to go into a little bit about how when we're trying to find happiness, you know, we talk about how that is our nature, but then if that's our nature, why don't we have it more? If that is our nature, why isn't it more evident? And I looked up the word nyomong, which is the Tibetan word for klesha. Klesha is a Sanskrit word. Klesha means defilement or delusion, affliction, distressed or troubled mind. Okay, that's a klesha. Or you could say the delusion. And what they say about delusion that keeps us from experiencing our happiness then is that it is a mental state. This delusion is a mental state that produces turmoil and confusion within us, right? It disturbs our mental peace and our happiness. So it is a mental state that's covering over this, what we call the Buddha nature, right? Buddha nature.
Mm-hmm. But also be contingent upon the worldview of the person too, or maybe the false perception of something being not coming from its own side.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, our perception. And so the causes of this delusion then are three. Okay? We're looking at loving kindness and happiness, but we're filled with all of these other difficulties in our lives. So what are the causes of these delusions? Okay? So the causes then are not eliminating latent delusions. Okay, what's latent? Yeah, they're kind of not evident, but they're hanging around. Exactly what?
Soon to come.
they're like, you know, hanging around me, right? Yeah, so, right. We don't eliminate these latent or non-evident delusions. So we just kind of keep them in our bag and carry them with us everywhere we go, right? Okay, and so the second one is close association with the objects that cause us to be prone to generate the delusions. Okay, it causes us to be inclined to generate the delusions. Yeah? For instance, the classic example is if someone never touches alcohol, you can live in a house that's full of alcohol everywhere, right? And it doesn't bother them. It's like, it's just stuff, you know, clutter in the house. But for someone else, then if you are prone to the delusion of getting intoxicated, then to have that in your periphery, then it's a big problem. It's a big cause for trouble. Okay, so that's just one example. You know your own prone to generate delusion objects? any offerings here?
Chocolate?
Okay. Uh-huh, Shirley.
A study was done on happiness in different countries, and some of the happiest people are the poorest. Latin America is just so happy, and so that overall the and that here.
It's absolutely true.
Right after I read this, I heard someone say on the radio station, if you're not happy with all you have right now, what makes you think that having more will make you happier?
Yeah, and we're totally caught up in the keeping up with the Hiltons. The Hiltons. did you hear in the Time magazine, it said their grandfather Hilton gave all of his wealth to charity and left Paris and her sister $5 million each, I think that was it. But he gave billions to charity. So, yeah. Right. Well, this is where our practice comes in, when it's other people's suffering. Now, how do we, you know, if you would just change, then I could be really happy, right?
And
defending the innocent. Yes. Well, this is where we have this balance of how do we live and practice knowing the suffering and condition of existence. Mm-hmm. And in samsara, all is suffering. All is suffering. You know, this is what the Buddha said. And the thing is, the first noble truth, you know, the noble truth of suffering. And also the Buddha has said too, you know, if suffering were not possible to be eliminated, then why study it? Why practice it? Why think about it? If we could not get rid of suffering, then, like the Dalai Lama says, then just go live it up. Huh?
Many people do.
Trying to assuage the suffering. By drinking it away, by eating it away, by working it away, by shopping it away, right? We're trying to rectify this empty pit inside that is so full of sorrow and pain and dissatisfaction. Because the more you look at it outside in the world, it is endless. It is incredibly pervasive. That's the pervasive part that Frank brought up, you know, pervasive suffering. It's a constant in our lives around us. So, you know, how is it that people can be happy in the midst of this? So This is a big part of practice, you know, is understanding the condition of suffering and looking at what we can do about it. How do we practice? You know, what can we do to relieve the suffering of others in our lives? And so much of it is transforming our mental attitude, because otherwise you exhaust yourselves outside. You know, there's only so much that you can really do. And then after that, people spend their entire lives working for others, and some people gain incredible satisfaction out of that, and others are dashed to the rocks. You know? So how do you sustain the joy, the dance of joy, in the place of that? Sorrow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It helps me this way, because I realize that everyone has their own karma, even babies, and understanding that we do have past lives, and what they've gotten from that. Like, why would one baby have such a wonderful time? Another baby is suffering. And we understand that there is a past life, future life, present life. Then we realize that they've done it themselves. It's not, and you can do simply. not so hard on yourself. You realize that there is a reason for things happening. Realize people are going, why is it happening when a baby, like they're born dead or they have illnesses or whatever and they haven't had time to think? They don't have time. They just were born dead. How could? And then your mother's womb is even.
So.
You can help by realizing that they're things too.
Yeah, that goes right into some words from His Holiness where he says, you know, there are two reasons that are important for us to understand the nature of the mind in order to look at this and to cultivate this, to cultivate greater loving kindness, you know, to cultivate more love in our lives. And by looking at the workings of karma and how our motivations are linked with our mind, that gives rise to these kind of actions, then we can see that our mind and its role is crucial to understanding our experience and our existence in this life. Yeah. So in these two reasons, he says, the first one is that we have an intimate connection between our mind and our karma. Our mind and our karma. And the second one is that our state of mind plays a crucial role in our experience of happiness or suffering. Okay? Because, you know, it's like one person... Two people may be experiencing the same kind of challenge in their lives, you know, of losing a child, say, or of losing a parent, which we all experience. But one person handles it in a completely different way than another, you know, and it's not to say that you are shut down and flippant and disregard and uncaring. And this is one of the things where how do you bring in that soft feeling, gentle heart in the situation of it? You know, when we develop renunciation and non-attachment to things, it doesn't mean that we become calloused and cold. You know, it's like, I was just so surprised when we watched that movie, I believe it was on Mustang, where I think it was Kirti Senshab Rinpoche, no, it was another lama, and two monks from the Dalai Lama's monastery made a journey into Mustang to for some people, and then they brought these two boys back. But when they were in Mustang, they were able to look over the Himalayas and see into Tibet. And this was before the Tibetans started coming out of Tibet. You know, this was where the walls were shut and it was just this icy cold border of mountains. And very little was coming in or out during the Cultural Revolution. And so, you know, this monk is looking out over the mountains on this film and he's crying because he realizes, you know, that he can see his home, but he cannot go there. And then after the film, you know, somebody says to me, what was he crying for? I thought they were, you know, non-attached, you know? But non-attachment doesn't mean that you just shut down and you become calloused and unfeeling anymore. You know, in fact, you're a big part of practice is connection. Are you connecting with others in your practice of loving kindness? You know, is there the love? Is there the heart there? And it's all about connecting there. You know, so I think this is where our you know, even though the mind understands there's suffering in the world, there are challenges, people do ghastly crimes to each other, people are incredibly inhumane to others, yet how do you keep and sustain this soft, caring heart, you know, and generate love even for people who are the perpetrators of such heinous crimes and things, you know, how do you how do you still love in the case of this, you know? It's like, typically when you look at our love, it's very selective. You know, well, I love Annie and Sharon and Doran, you know, it's like, but you guys, you know. It's like, you know, but you watch how we're so fickle with that. And then it changes, you know, well, you guys, you know, it's like I'm going to love over here. And we're just really not very stable in our love, even with someone that we marry, you know, our own children who we care for dearly. We become very fickle and defiant and challenging. And so again, too, you know, just in our own personal experience, how do we keep that continuity of love? Yeah. So I remember when my daughter was six, you know, it's like, how do you discipline a six-year-old? Yeah. And I was living at a Buddhist center in Hawaii, and the teacher, Nichiren Rinpoche, said to me, "You can act angry, but don't be angry. Yeah. You can act angry, but don't be angry." Constant practice, you know? It's a side where on a child, if you say, "Oh no, you shouldn't run into the street," right? It's, they're not gonna get it. But if they keep running into the street, you have to act with ferociousness, you know, for them to get it. So what is skillful means? And that's where our practice comes in. What is skillful means in working with others so that the lesson is given and taken and comprehended? And, you know, it's different for everybody. You know, if it were a pat answer, while you do X, Y, and Z, it's not going to work for every child or every relationship. Yeah? Robert?
It also stimulates their awareness of that right and wrong or your expectations of them without being condescending. Because I think with kids, if you get very angry, that's all that they see is the anger. They're not even thinking rationally about everything else, because that's how they're receiving, like you were talking about before, with this open heart. They're just receiving information.
Yes.
You can make it that way where it's like almost mock anger in a way, but you're letting them know that it is important and it is serious.
Right.
Then you're honoring their intelligence too, because kids are smart.
They are very smart.
They catch on right away.
And sometimes we forget and we only go into the discipline side and we forget about the love side, where we spend some time and read books with them and care for them. You know, and it just gets into this punitive, don't do this, don't do that, you got to do this, and we don't take some nurturing, caring, loving time with them. So it's really a big balance to, yeah, this skillful means. That's our challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's interesting, you do have to know the child, too, because some children are very, very smart. I happen to have a child that's very, very smart. When she was little, I tried to hold her hand and say, "Let's go. Hold my hand so you won't have a problem crossing the street." She won't do it. But when I say, "Would you please hold my hand to take me across the street and protect me?"
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, she holds me really tight. That's how it is. So you have to kind of, you know, like skillful means. You really have to learn skillful means.
Right.
People and by ourselves too.
Yes. Right. Right. Thanks, Melinda. Yeah. So those causes that, you know, that cause the delusions, again, not eliminating the latent delusions. So it's like we allow them in. We kind of hang out with them. They're our buddies sometimes. We just kind of let them be part of our persona, you know, rather than really challenging them and getting rid of them and washing them away. So it's a big practice too of how do we eliminate those delusions? Because those delusions are adventitious. They're not part of our nature. Remember, if we have Buddha nature, we have this enlightened potential and quality, then our anger, our jealousy, our hatred, our spite, all of these things are more on the surface. They're not our true quality. You know, you have to remember, in Buddhism, we don't have original sin. Okay, Buddhism came about almost 2,600 years ago, so it's not about original sin, it's about original goodness. Yeah. And so to really look at this place where we have this quality of the nature of mind, again, the nature of mind is luminous and clear and apprehending. It's knowing. It has this quality of understanding. You know, this is the quality of mind. It's not our delusions, and you see how we identify with them so much. So in working with this whole idea with loving kindness, Sharon Salzberg was saying that she was asking His Holiness, is it okay if we work with, may I be filled with loving kindness? Can we Westerners start with ourselves first? No? Because we have such low self-esteem and problems about our pure nature that, it's almost like she says, oh, well, I'm hopeless, but I hope you have happiness, right? Or I'm really no good, but, I'm wishing you lots of happiness. How can you really love anyone if you don't have it in yourself? And we need to fill ourselves with love and with encouragement and with this kind of joy and energy so that we can share it with others. It's like that limb of rejoicing. When we have that joy within ourselves, it comes, it fills you with energy. And if we are wiped out, depleted, depressed, and downcast, how can you go about wishing others loving kindness if we don't have it? So, the Dalai Lama was just kind of surprised. He says, you Westerners think like that? because even Alan Wallace was saying too, he says, I wrote it down here, what did he say? He says, this Tibetan Lama was saying, of course we never think about our own faults. We only talk about others' faults, okay? Others' delusions. We don't talk about ours. And Alan is a fantastic translator, and he countered this teacher saying, well, on the contrary, we Westerners, we Americans, kind of hyperfixate on our faults, and we just beat ourselves down into this pulp of, this morass of inability and low self-esteem and not being capable, and we walk around with this cloak of sadness around us. But if you remember and recall that our quality and our nature is this enlightened quality, we have the enlightened potential, then, it's like think of original goodness instead of original sin. Yeah? Think of your original joy. And so to really observe and counter that, challenge that when it arises, because it's saying, that these delusions, it's saying not eliminating our latent delusions. It's not saying inherent, undifferentiable delusions, which are non-different than who we are in our nature. Yeah? And so those delusions are like a misapprehension, a misunderstanding, misviewing of things, So our delusion, our hatred, our anger, our attachment, our clinging, our possessiveness to others is a mental attitude that is torturing us, right? It just, and we entertain it when we sit in meditation, right? We start out with our breath, and then this thought comes in, oh, I was really no good. And then, you know, you cling onto that one, and it, you just grind yourself into that, and pretty soon, you know, you're only focusing on this upset, no good mind, rather than the joy and potential of who you are. You know, so we watch those states of mind, we just welcome them in, you know. So what we have to do is watch what we're ingesting mentally. You know, watch how we work with that. So so that third cause then is entertaining wrong thoughts. A cause for our delusions is entertaining wrong thoughts. We keep fanning the fire of those thoughts that bring us down, rather than being in this space of love. Okay, so so in your meditation, it's really important to watch. You know what? Because thoughts arise and they disappear. Thoughts arise and they disappear. And then one comes along and you just, you know, off to the races with it. Yeah. And then you forget that you're even sitting and meditating in the room. You're just fantasizing this whole full-blown thing about who knows what, you know? Yeah. So, and what? And then you go to sleep. And then you go to sleep, right? Because we get shut down. So there's that place. You know, when love is open and free and caring, you know, then you realize, oh, but they did that to me. Then, you know, you realize you start closing in on your love. You start shutting the doors. And rather than this free, open heart, you know, we are constricting ourselves. And this is where it's important for the skillful means to come in, about how do we communicate so that we have this sense of keeping it open. Because sometimes we do that closure on ourselves, and sometimes it's because we need to communicate and work with others. Yeah? Mm-hmm, Robert?
I think it's probably very common when you're talking about the Western viewpoint. I don't know if it's a Puritanism kind of starting point, but the idea of if we're conditionally loving towards ourselves, like, you know, I could have done this, I should have done that, I could have done better, or what, that's going to play into probably relationships on some level, right?
Oh, yeah. It'll definitely pop up. You know, how we kind of lock into that, and we find relationships that hook into those things. So, you know, we need to keep working on ourselves to clear up those attachments and possessions. You know, it's like you watch how we are with that. So we get into this place of being, you know, finding somebody that will hook right into my own neurosis. My own special brand, you know, and find somebody to latch right into it. And then you think it's true love. So it's really something to, you know, how our mental, disturbing mental attitudes then get projected out onto others, and we harm others because of our own delusions, you know, that we just throw them out to others, and we can be really cruel because, you know, we're out of control in here. So to watch how can we work on that and be in this loving, open space, you know, which is why it's important to work on ourselves. So, let's see, there's this attachment as the near enemy, possessiveness as a distortion of our love, you know, the distortion, and then the blockade that we impinge on ourselves with shutting down. So to watch, you know, how can we continue to cultivate and foster more openness in our relationships? Because, you know, when attachment arises, we, like, if a person, we're attached because the person is really attractive, right? The person's really attractive, then we tend to exaggerate their good qualities and play those up, and we diminish and can't see their negative qualities, and we're just totally starry-eyed. But you watch the mind that's clinging and grasping and saying, I gotta have it, you know, I have to, and you watch the games we play when we gotta have it. Yeah, you just pull every trick out of your box. Yeah? Maybe you can help me with some, right? Weeping, whining, you need me. Oh, you guys are so quiet. Don't you have some good ones, Shirley?
I'm sure everyone in here is thinking of a million things. For me, for half of my life or more, it was, Daddy, Daddy, what can I do to make you love me? Yeah. So every relationship that I had after, from teenage years on, was just a redoing of that horrible relationship I had with my father. What can I do? So mine was all the I was perfect. I was so perfect. What can I do? Bam, bam. Oh, what can I do to make you love me? Bam, bam. What can I do to make you love me?
Yeah.
There's a description that I heard once in alcoholism, that it's not the alcohol that's the real problem, it's the ism. Mm. I sabotage myself.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. But it's going to this place of the dissatisfaction, you know? And what Mamie was bringing up about karma, it's like realizing there are karmic circumstances that have arisen that created the conditions that we're in, and how do we practice so that we can be satisfied? We can change that dissatisfaction into satisfaction, you know, to a place of contentedness, so that we're not needing, grasping, manipulating, judging, clawing at things, trying to fill this hole that can't be satisfied with things that are from the outside, you know? So this is where the loving kindness needs to come and be generated within ourselves before we can really dance with and enjoy and appreciate who's there in front of you. You know, and then have a little more skillful wisdom and understanding that that all beings also have suffering and have their own handicaps in life that they are working on. And when we are attached to something attractive, we don't see those handicaps. We don't see that we're all struggling along as we can too, you know. So this is why it's part of developing a realistic understanding of seeing things as they are, to see things that, you know, even though it's like that when it was maybe about 10 or 15 years ago, when that this young, very thin Geshe came, and, you know, it was Arnold Schwarzenegger was the Terminator, right? And then he had to have heart surgery, and this young Geshe is going, he had heart surgery? It's like, how can someone who has the appearance of, wasn't he Mr. Atlas and Mr. Universe and all of these things? You know, how can Mr. Universe have heart problems, right? And but you see how we get with our attachment, or our attachments, our misperception of phenomena, right? And it goes the same way when we have aversion towards others too. You heighten and fan those things that appear to be negative, and we forget any saving good qualities that they have at all. You know, they're just suddenly this full-blown demon, when in fact, you know, they have their own handicaps and difficulties and challenges and things to work on too. Okay. Robert, and then Mimi.
Okay.
Well, I just was thinking about the attachment part that Rama Nishi showed us very well one time. He was teaching, and this Robbie was sitting next to him here. And he's very militant looking, and he looks at us because he's a TA. So we have to be very good because he's watching us. So Rama Nishi has this with a rim. He covers his head, and he peeked at Robbie and says, "Oh, isn't he handsome?" And he goes on and on and on. And Robbie just got real red. And we were all laughing. And he didn't realize Rama Yeshu was kidding him about being attracted. You know, he's so handsome. He's so wonderful. Oh, I can't watch him. I have to cover myself so I won't look at him. And he goes on and on. And everybody started laughing. You know? And this shows a, you know, really attachment. It's the way we think about somebody. But he's just Robbie. And he's just a person.
Yeah. He was acting it out. Yeah. Lama Yeshe was so incredible in doing that. And just pointing out this, you know, the manifesting our play, you know, our dance. We must have been quite a show. And we still are, you know, we're still a big show to them. Like,
the monks all laugh at the Westerners. They seem to be really, like, hilarious. That's my delusion.
Well, yeah, it's a different culture. Yeah, it's like we're funny to them, you know. It's they're funny to us sometimes. You know, it's just, I think, you know, the humor is where we need to go rather than the aversion and stomping out of other races. And so it's that place. But, you know, Lama Yeshe also said when we go into this place of real depression and sadness and poor me, you know, he would say to us, don't have poor quality image. Yeah. Don't have poor quality image. Like, remember who you are, you know, remember. We have the enlightened potential that we can become Buddhas. And yet we get just dashed to the, you know, the rocks, and we just embody like him carrying the Zen around his face. You know, when you're seeing somebody attractive, you watch how we act. How do we act when, you know, when we're drawn to somebody? It's just a big show, right? But, you know, watch how you act when you're depressed as well. Who do you, you know, what kind of circles do you circulate in when you're depressed? And who do you hang out with? You know, and you just kind of get people to enhance the mood you're in, you know? So to watch how we do that, which is why we need to keep working on ourselves. Because you know we're out there pulling in all the things that are going to enhance our delusion. Okay. Did you want to share something?
Well, there's a monk that was asked about celibacy and attractive women. You know, like, you're out and you see beautiful women. How do you deal with that? How do you separate that from the mind and not think of this individual, you know, from a desirable standpoint? He said, oh, you know, I just focus on them, you know, their ultimate direction. And I was like, what do you mean? I just focus on their body decomposing. You know, the fact that that body is headed towards eventually breaking down.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, whoa, yeah. It's really profound. Like a, almost like a death meditation, but this beautiful body, something we would say, you know, a model or a supermodel or whatever it is, breaking down, and the hair falling out.
Teeth falling out,
all
yeah.
Of, yeah.
Yeah, right. First noble truth.
Hardcore.
Absolutely. Yeah. There are many, many, many meditations on this. Yeah.
How's that work for you?
You know, it's like intellectually it works, and you're going along fine, practicing equanimity with everybody, and then suddenly, you know, there he is. You know, and you go, oh my gosh, and you blush, and you act weird, and, you know, it's like, can somebody go talk to him, find out who he is, and da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, you watch how nutty we get around that. Shirley.
And it doesn't have to, well. Annie got to witness me a couple of weeks ago. I took up all the offerings from the jar, stole the jars. You know, I'm in charge of the jars that you guys fill up. I got all the money, and I got it all in the hundreds, and I went up to get Shula upstairs. And I told Annie I felt like I was in the presence of a rock star or something. I started fumbling, and I was tripping over my words, and he was laughing. To top it all off, he gives me some fruit, and we walk out. Came downstairs. I was so overwhelmed by being alone with him that I didn't give him the money.
My first trip to India, I kind of did that too. I had a chance to study with Ling Rinpoche, who was the senior tutor of the Dalai Lama. And we had to ask permission to study with him, which is typically what you do. Before you study with someone, you ask their permission. And so we had an audience to go ask permission. And I was like so excited because I was going with my friends to see the Dalai Lama's tutor, you know. So I was like way ahead of the pack, you know, going to see him with my kata, you know, and then I turned around to see my friends, and I'm still walking, and my friends are way back there, and I'm walking in backwards into Ling Rinpoche's room. And I just walk around like this, you know, and he just laughed. But, you know, it's like there are these things which are normal in a sense, and it's very charming, you know, because it's pure, you know, it's pure, so it's quite wonderful. But anyway, so at one point, you know, it's like the Dalai Lama in this conversation with Sharon Salzberg, you know, said she said that our low self-esteem is so strong that we need to work on ourselves first before we really develop loving kindness for others. And His Holiness was amazed. She said, he says, "You mean people don't feel that they are worthy to be happy?" And they actually feel contempt for themselves. And so then, you know, Sharon kind of had this conversation with him, and then His Holiness says, "But in spite of that, do people still try to find happiness even though they have low self-esteem?" And she said, "Yes, yeah, that even though we have self-contempt, we still want happiness. Low self-esteem, we want happiness." Now, so to watch, it's like, again, really, that is like a delusion. That's like a klesha in a way. You know, it's one of those latent delusions that we cling to. and we identify with when it's not our nature. So we really need to watch that one. Okay. So I think we'll stop here, but I wanted to do a short meditation. So again, sit comfortably. So in this short meditation, I'd just like you to work with this, may I be filled with loving kindness. But first of all, think of a time when you were young. Think of a time when you were young and recall an instance, a situation when you were really loved, that you really got it. And then just say to yourself, may I be filled with loving kindness. Just allow that love in, just flooding you completely. And then think of yourself as you are now, sitting in this room. And again, say the line to yourself, may I be filled with loving kindness. As I enter this year, 2008, may I be filled with loving kindness. Watch where those places arise where we shut down or we narrow our view. Part of this practice is to keep opening to your true nature. Now project out 20 or 30 years of what you might look like then, what your situation and condition may be. And again say, may I be filled with loving kindness. So we'll stop here, but you can continue that meditation in working with loved ones and people who are difficult to you. You can work with that meditation. see. Very quickly, I've got a few announcements. The new newsletter is combined by Connie Pham, and it's not out yet, but I just wanted to make a couple announcements. Sunday the 13th, which is next Sunday, I believe. Already it is, right? Next Sunday, we're going to have the 24-hour Mahayana precepts. We'll start at 6 a.m. if anyone would like to observe that for the day. We'll start here by taking the vows at 6 in the morning, and there are 8 vows just for 24 hours. And it's, if I can remember them all, not to kill, steal, not to eat after noon, no lying, no sitting or sleeping or on high beds or thrones, not to wear jewelry or makeup or dance and sing for just for 24 hours, and no alcohol, so no sex for 24 hours, okay. I'm sorry? Yes, you can speak, right, yeah. Do you have a hot share, Frank?
No, I mean, I know that in my case, it's more like 24 years.
You can speak. But with the meal, it's only one meal, and generally you take it before noon. But since class ends at noon, well, you can have lunch right afterwards. And it should be a vegetarian meal. And, you know, later on, you shouldn't be drinking smoothies and, you know, thick, hot mocha chocolate whatevers and with ice cream, you know. It's like, it's a one meal vegetarian for that day. So you don't have breakfast and you just have lunch vegetarian, okay? Well, I think a big part is looking at your motivation. Like if you need to see it for driving conditions for the next day or something like that, you know, essential things, that's fine. But if you've got, you know, 3 DVDs lined up, yeah, then I would put those aside at least for 24 hours. Uh-huh, Robert.
Would you mind going back to the Nagarjuna quote before the end of class, or could I ask you after, with the faculties part?
Oh yeah, you can ask me afterwards. Okay, so that's the calendar. Also, Thursday, February 7th is Tibetan Losar, the Tibetan New Year. We'll have something here early in the morning. I'm sorry to back up a little bit. Saturday the 19th, we're going to have a movie night with a community gathering, a movie night, and we'll be showing Cry of the Snow Lion and have some discussion. So those are some upcoming things. Annie?
Next Sunday, before we take the precept, are we allowed to eat? Before?
You can have things to drink the whole time, but generally...
Before 6 a.m., is that a breakfast time?
I don't know. Do you know the answer to that? Generally, I've done one meal.
From midnight.
Midnight or from when the sun comes up?
You take the vows before dawn, until dawn the next day.
If you need to take some meal with meditation or something like
that? Yes.
That's, you know,
right.
You can always
thank you. Right. Yes. If you have a health condition, you're hypoglycemic or something like that, it's totally okay. They call it the medicine meal. You know, you can have a little repast, especially if you have to have medicine. Okay, and let's see. Venerable Tartso took her mom up to see her mom's sister because she has Alzheimer's and was dying, and Tartso said, no, we're not going. And I said, it's your mom's request. She wants to go. So Tartso decided to drive through the snowstorm, and she is struggling to come back. She should be back by tomorrow night sometime, but she says, I can't even see the lines of the road. So she is wending her way back here. Her mom got to see her two sisters, and Tartso said the Lord's Prayer, since they're devout Christians, and her mom and her aunt just really calmed down, said a Hail Marys and the Sog offering Lama Chopa for her. And then yesterday Tartso was driving through the storm and her aunt passed away. So it was very timely. She did get to see her aunt and her sister. Her mom did get to see her sister. So her name is Audrey McKenzie. She had Alzheimer's and she was 82. We can say some Mani mantras. The other thing is that tonight, we're about 9:30, we're going to have some prayers here. If anyone else would like to join us, the monks have encouraged students to come. We're going to do Geshe-la's long life prayer, and you can do Mani mantras as well. So you are welcome to come for that. It's a little bit late, but about 9:30 tonight. Yeah. And then Chenrezig practice will continue, I think, tomorrow, right? Yeah. We'll continue the Chenrezig practice as well.
Tomorrow?
Yes, Mondays. And Friday nights, there's meditation too.
No Wednesday night classes?
No Wednesday night classes until Geshe-la comes back. Okay, and the monks are leaving next Saturday. Is that right? They're leaving next Saturday, so we're going to do this long life prayer tonight for Geshe-la. And possibly Wednesday too. So let's do some mantras. I don't know how the monks do the Tibetan, so we'll just say Om Mani Padme Hum, okay? Om Mani Padme Hum, 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 Om Mani Padme Hum. And we'll do the dedication prayers on the last page. Because of these merits, may I quickly become Guru Lord Buddha and lead each and every sentient being into his enlightened realm. May the precious bodhicitta that has not yet been received be received, and may that which has been received be increased and not decreased. May the precious view of emptiness, shunyata, that has not been received be received, and may that which has been received be increased and not decreased. By the virtue of offering to you assembly of Buddhas visualized before me, this mandala built on a base resplendent with flowers, saffron, water, and incense, adorned with Mount Meru and the four continents, as well as with the sun and moon, may all sentient beings share its effects. Idam Guru Rana Mandala Kamiyataya Me. In the land of snowy mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. Lord Chenrezig Tenzin Gyatso, may you stay until samsara ends. Okay, we'll do our bows together.
Thank you. Yeah.